Approximately a year ago, I had a dream where someone who seemed like a minister of God handed me a series of books and workbooks, and I realized that they were all by A.W. Tozer. And I feel like on the top of those books was a book called The Pursuit of God. And so I woke up and then I went to do some research of A.W. Tozer's books, and I started reading them. And I think I read the one, Pursuit of God, but I don't even think I finished it, to be honest. I got distracted and moved on. And a couple of days ago, God reminded me again about the dream. And I went into my dream notebook. I found the dream, I read it, and he said the assignment was clear. Please go do it. So I decided I'm going to read these books aloud, and I would share because it's such a beautiful book. It's amazing. And I would like to share so that anybody who wants to follow in can join me to read it. All right, God bless you. It's me, Osaru Alile, on the Encounter series. Here is a masterly study of the inner life by a heart thirsting after God, eager to grasp at least the outskirts of his ways, the abyss of his love for sinners, and the height of his unapproachable majesty. And it was written by a busy pastor in Chicago. Who could imagine David writing the 23rd Psalm on South Halsted Street, or a medieval mystic finding inspiration in a small study on the second floor of a frame house on the vast, flat checkered board of endless streets, where cross the crowded ways of life, where sound the cries of race and clan in hunt of wretchedness and need, one shadowed threshold dark with fears, and parts where hid the lures of greed. But even as Dr. Frank Mason North of New York says in his immortal poem, so Mr. Tozer says in his book, above the noise of selfish strife, we hear their voice, O Son of Man. My acquaintance with the author is limited to belief, to brief visits and loving fellowship in his church. There I discovered a self-made scholar, an omnivorous reader with a remarkable library of theological and devotional books, and one who seemed to burn the midnight oil in pursuit of God. His book is the result of long meditation and much prayer. It is not a collection of sermons. It does not deal with the pulpit and the pew, but with the soul at thirst for God. The chapters could be summarized in Moses' prayer, show me thy glory, or Paul's acclamation, oh, the depth of the riches both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. It is theology not for the head, but for the heart. This is deep insight, sobriety of style, and a Catholicity of outlook that is refreshing. The author has few quotations, but he knows the saints and mystics of the centuries, Augustine, Nicholas of Cusa, Thomas A. Kempson, von Hugo, Finley, Wesley, and many more. The 10 chapters are heart-searching, and the prayers at the close of each are for the closet, not the pulpit. I felt the nearness of God while reading them. Here is a book for every pastor, missionary, and devout Christian. It deals with the deep things of God and the riches of his grace. Above all, it has the keynote of sincerity and humility. This is written by Samuel M. Zwemer from New York City. In this hour of all but universal darkness, one cheering gleam appears. Within the fold of conservative Christianity, there are to be found increasing numbers of persons whose religious lives are marked by growing hunger after God himself. They are eager for spiritual realities and will not be put off with words, nor will they be content with correct interpretations of truth. They are athirst for God, and they will not be satisfied till they have drunk deep at the fountain of living water. This is the only real harbinger of revival which I have been able to detect anywhere on the religious horizon. It may be a cloud the size of a man's hand for which a few saints here and there have been looking. it can result in a resurrection of life for many souls and a recapture of the radiant wonder which should accompany faith in Christ, that wonder which has all but fled the Church of God in our day. But this hunger must be recognized by our religious leaders. Current evangelicalism has to change the figure, laid the altar and divided the sacrifice into parts, and now seems satisfied to count the stones and rearrange the pieces, but never a care that there's not a sign of fire upon the lot of lofty camel. But God be thanked that there are few who care. There are those who, while they love the altar and delight in the sacrifice, are yet unable to reconcile themselves to the continued absence of fire. They desire God above all. They are thirst to taste for themselves the piercing sweetness of the love of Christ, whom all the holy prophets did write and the psalmists did sing. There is today no lack of Bible teachers to set forth correctly the principles of the doctrines of Christ, but too many of these seem satisfied to teach the fundamentals of the faith year after year, strangely unaware that there is in their ministry no manifest presence, nor anything unusual in their personal lives. They minister constantly to believers who feel within their breast a longing which their teaching simply does not satisfy. I trust I speak in charity, but the lack in our pulpits is real. Milton's terrible sentence applies to our day as accurately as it did to his. The hunger sheep look up and they are not fed. It is a solemn thing and no scandal in the kingdom to see God's children starving while actually seated at the Father's table. The truth of Wesley's words is established before our eyes. Orthodoxy or right opinion is at best a very slender part of religion. Though right tempers cannot subsist without right opinions, yet right opinions may subsist without right tempers. They may be a right opinion of God without either love or one right temper towards him. Satan is proof of this. Thanks to our splendid Bible societies and to other effective agencies for the dissemination of the word, there are today many millions of people who hold right opinions, probably more than ever before in the history of the church. Yet I wonder if there were ever a time where true spiritual worship was at the lower ebb. To great sections of the church, the art of worship has been lost entirely, and it is in its place, and in its place has come this strange and foreign thing called the program. This word has been borrowed from the stage and applied with sad wisdom to the type of public service which now passes from worship among us. Sound Bible exposition is an imperative must in the Church of the Living God. Without it, no church can be a New Testament church in any strict meaning of the term, but exposition can be carried in such a way as to leave hearers devoid of any true spiritual nourishment whatsoever. For it is not mere words that nourish the soul, but God himself. And unless and until hearers find God in personal experience, they are not the better for having heard the truth. The Bible is not an end in itself, but a means to bring men to an intimate and satisfying knowledge of God, that they may enter into him and they may delight in his presence, may taste and know the inner sweetness of the very God himself in the core and the center of their hearts. This book is a modest attempt to aid God's hungry children so to find him. Nothing here is new except in the sense that it is a discovery which my own heart has made of spiritual realities most delightfully and wonderfully to me. Others before me have gone much farther into these holy mysteries than I have done, but if my fire is not large as it is yet real, then there are those who can light their candle at its flame. This was written by A.W. Tauzer in Chicago, Illinois, on June 16th, 1984.